fighting for America.
This is a bigger issue than Tony. This highlights a universal problem with law enforcement and how its procedures have been carried out, especially in light of what's happened over the summertime.
Fighting for Idaho.
If you buy 100 books of authoritative Islamic law, what you're going to find is 100% of those books say that jihad is obligatory until the entire world is under Islamic rule. There's no other version of it.
Fighting for you.
School districts, again, have been levying in order to just keep the doors open, let alone keep programs going for our students.
Voice Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, living the dream each and every morning at 580 KIDO. Make sure you check us out on the web at 580KIDO.com. Here to talk about Iran, Israel, and ISIS and why it's so important to us. Avi Davis, president of the American Freedom Alliance, the editor of the Intermediate Zone. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Very concerned about this possible deal with Iran, Netanyahu getting ripped. It's as if the world's gone topsy-turvy.
It does seem like that, doesn't it, sometimes? And unfortunately, the response that the prime minister received from the Obama administration made it look like Adolf Hitler was coming to speak to Congress. It was, I've never quite seen anything like it. And unfortunately, it really underlined the declining relationship between the two men, but also between the two countries. And this is a very, very serious problem given the depths of the overreach of the Iranian government right now and its attempts to influence events in the Middle East.
Well, fiction has kind of emulated that. Avi, you're a pretty busy guy. Have you watched the new season of House of Cards?
You know, I have not. I've watched the first two seasons, but I haven't got around to watching the third season yet. It's something that's certainly on my agenda.
Well, I don't want to ruin it for you, but Israel comes off and some of the scenes later on in the series is a bad person and or a bad country, and you have the Underwoods telling off Israel, and I'm going, this is what's happening here. We're supposed to be close with Israel, and yet we treat them like second-class citizens.
It's something of deep, deep concern to me. I have seen over the last 6 years a decline of respect for the state of Israel. When we consider that it is the regional superpower, it's a stable ally, it's democratic, its interests align with the United States in almost every regard, particularly with the rise of barbaric regimes such as ISIS and the insurgency such as Al-Qaeda, as well as the growing influence and reach of Iran. So it's one of deep concern and deep puzzlement, really, why Israel has sort of been thrown to the dogs. And I think the Israelis feel this. And it's one of the reasons that Obama himself is so unpopular in Israel, and that's across the political spectrum. He is regarded as probably the worst president the people of Israel have ever had to deal with. And it's also the reason that Netanyahu came to speak to Congress, because he knows this, and he also knows that Congress is far more amenable to Israel, and it's always been a traditional friend of Israel over the last 40 years.
Why do you think we're trading Israel for Iran, considering that Iran hates us, we're the great Satan, they violate every agreement that we make with them?
Well, I wish I knew that, the answer to that one, too, because it certainly doesn't make any sense. I think that Barack Obama is in the classic mold of a 1930s appeaser. He wants to avoid military conflict at all costs. And he sees the possibility of bringing Iran along as an ally in the fight against Iran, against ISIS and Al-Qaeda in the Middle East. And unfortunately, that jettisons Israel from our considerations, because Israel's interests are obviously not aligned with Iran's. Barack Obama sees, it really comes down to this. I think that he believes in traditional balance of power politics. And we've seen that in the way he's diminished America's role in the world over the last six years. He's diminished it, cut back American influence, and in order to allow other powers to fill the vacuum. And I think he sees the same thing in the Middle East, where Israel exists as a regional superpower, and he feels necessary to perhaps balance Israel's influence out by giving Iran a greater edge. And whether that's a nuclear edge, I'm not sure. I don't know if that's part of his calculations. But that's where I think his foreign policy is going.
580KIDO, Avi Davis with us, Kevin Miller in the morning as we continue on. But, it seems like the president is just engaged in a resume tour. When people that don't remember this time will say, well, your history, he got us out of Afghanistan, got us out of Iraq. He's bringing in the Iranians, which no president has ever done. Never mind, the Middle East is a disaster under this administration. The chaos that we haven't seen for quite some time.
It is chaotic, and it's growing more so every day. Although there have been some advances by the Iraqi army in the last few days in attempting to recapture Tikrit, which is the hometown of Saddam Hussein. The collapse of the Yemeni government in January, just as Barack Obama was delivering his State of the Union speech, in which he was declaring our alliance is strong, and the replacement of that government with an Iranian-aligned government with the Houthis was a signal of the real problems that America is facing in the region. And Barack Obama pulled our troops out of Iraq in 2011 against all advice of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in which they argued and pleaded to retain the residual force to maintain some kind of order in the region. And this has led to a vacuum that has been filled successively by al-Qaeda and then by ISIS. His failures in Syria to really address the depredations of Bashar al-Assad also have added to the sense that these regimes are invulnerable, that they can really do anything they want, and there's no one really to wrap their knuckles. In Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood rose to power and was regarded as a legitimate government by the Obama administration. Egypt is the largest Arab country, the one with really the most influence, and yet it was our longtime ally there in Hosni Mubarak was thrown to the dogs. And so there have been succession of blunders by the Obama administration, which it fails to recognize. It sees itself as a success, as having executed a successful foreign policy. But unfortunately, the events of the region and of the time indicate that it is anything but successful, and the situation is explosive and extremely dangerous.
Do you think we'll be bringing troops back into the region?
I don't think there's any doubt that American troops will have to be added if we don't want the spread of these barbaric regimes, which are raping and pillaging and crucifying and burning innocent people all across the region. I think it's not just that they're doing that to their own populations, but they're drawing and are a magnet for Western insurgents, for Western recruits. 650 from Germany. It's estimated maybe 10,000 from France. 3,000 from England, Australia, Canada, New Zealand. Almost every country is contributing recruits to this contagion. And if, unless we address them, unless we in some way try to prevent its spread, it's going to come here. So I think there's absolutely no question. We're going to have to fight them. American troops and an international force, actually led by the Americans, will become inevitable.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Avi Davis with us, president of the American Freedom Alliance, editor of the Intermediate Zone. You can read his work in the LA Times, Chicago Tribune, Philadelphia Inquirer, and The American Thinker, which is a great blog. Avi, let's get to ISIS. How did they just pop up, and is there a method to their brutal barbarity?
Well, yeah, I think there is a method, Kevin. Contrary to popular opinion, this is not Genghis Khan reborn in the 21st century. These are people actually sophisticated. Their use of technology is unparalleled for an insurgency, far, far superior to Al-Qaeda. Their ability to create campaigns on the internet and in the countries from which they are drawing recruits is also unparalleled. We are facing here a far more sophisticated enemy than most people realize. And the beheadings and the public beheadings and the televised beheadings are what is essentially political theater, produced for the benefit of Western audiences and done without shame, done without any kind of moral revulsion or moral restraint. It is a new force that whose real focus is on eschewing the very moral values of our own society. It's a counter value organization and insurgency, and that for that reason, we have to understand that this is like a black cloud that is drifting towards us, which will infect members of our citizens in our own countries to commit the same kind of heinous crimes because they look so effective and they look so influential. So I'm extremely worried about it, ISIS, and we do have to take it seriously. We do have to undertake a very, very concerted international campaign to defeat it, because it is the spearhead of something beyond what we've ever experienced before. And the other thing about this, Kevin, is that it does not derive from this strange kind of violent extremism that the president, the secretary of state, and so many other members of his administration seem to rely on to describe the rise of these terrible crimes, international crimes. It comes from Islam. It's the purest distillation of Islam, and it was actually identified as such by Graham Wood, who is no Republican or apologist or conservative, in the Atlantic Monthly a few weeks ago. It is without question derived from the Islamic religion, and we should be looking to Muslims all over the world, moderate Muslims all over the world, to disavow it and to call it for what it is.
You know, Avi, I saw that interview with him after he wrote that piece, and he was almost apologetic, but far from a right-winger there at the Atlantic, and he said, if you look at the Quran, this is the most literal interpretation, and the difference between ISIS and other folks in the Muslim faith is they do not follow the Quran to the letter of the law. That's my words, not his, but literally, which is what ISIS does. You can't get away from that, yet the administration will not even say that we're at war against radical Islam.
And this is the sure opening to a defeat. When you can't name your enemy, you can't list its sources of influence or from which it derives, its ideology derives, then you really are for a contest which which you can't even compete in, because you're not really grappling with the enemy. You're grappling with a phantom. And so this has been identified years and years ago by such writers as Robert Spencer, Andrew Boston, and Islamic experts, people who are not Muslims themselves, but even Bernard Lewis, the famous Bernard Lewis, have identified, you know, fundamentalist Islam as taking its cue directly, and extreme violent Islam as taking its cue and its ideological momentum from the Quran itself. And it is just pure foolishness to disregard that and to try and redefine your enemy as something it is not.
Avi, hold that thought. More coming up with Avi Davis as we go inside the fight with ISIS and can the Middle East ever be stable again? Those stories, those answers, and more coming up next. It is 8:20. You're listening to Kevin Miller at 580 KIDO.
On Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, K Miller in the morning. We're joined by our special guest, Avi Davis, president of the American Freedom Alliance, editor of the International Zone. You can catch him at avidavis.wordpress.com, AmericanFreedomAlliance.org. Avi, you know, most of us, and maybe this is the way in the administration, we feel that we can negotiate with folks. But when ISIS kills someone like James Foley or Kayleigh Mueller, you know, these folks don't want to negotiate with us. It just seems like we're not understanding their language because, as you've talked about before, this goes back to pre-Crusades.
Yes, we are not understanding their language, not understanding their ideology or their motivations. We think that you know, the Obama administration has actually come out and said that all this stems from poverty and poor education and lack of opportunity, and maybe if these people had opportunities to work in McDonald's, they'd be gainfully employed and wouldn't have to think about chopping off people's heads. That's just pure insanity. You know, to fob it off as so many people have done, by the way, in the past. You know, that extremist actions and Islamic violence, to fob it off as a, or to characterize it as an economic problem rather than an ideological one. It's an attempt to avoid what Samuel Huntington described in the early 90s after the collapse, after the end of the Cold War, the coming clash of civilizations. I'm a firm believer that we're in the midst of a clash of civilizations, that there are a number of competing empires and competing ideologies in the world, the competing for dominance. And that failure to recognize this, to failure to understand that our own values and traditions and sense of righteousness, that our way of life is superior to any other, is going to doom us to an endless conflict, because we're not going to be able to confront the enemies who are threatening our survival. And my organization, the American Freedom Alliance, has actually devoted itself to identifying threats to the continuity of Western civilization and identifying these kind of ideologies. And so for the last 10 years, we've been actively engaged in producing conferences, putting events together and writing op-eds and books devoted to that very, very mission.
Well, business has picked up for you in the last few years.
not very joyfully, I will say. You know, we're not at all happy that things have gone the way they have, and it's largely because the West lacks leadership. It lacks leaders who really are willing to put aside their multicultural sensitivities and call the growth of violent Islam for what it is and call terrorism for what it is, and for giving us a sense that our civilization is worth fighting for and is needs to be girded for a long, long struggle.
What about the killings of the Christians? What does that do for those folks there?
Well, the killings of the Christian community, the destruction, the worldwide destruction of the Christian communities is part and parcel of the assault on the West. The West is founded on Judeo-Christian values. And that's, I don't think that can be argued, although you will have secular humanists and atheists arguing something contrary, completely contrary, comes from natural law and stuff like that. Well, the historical record shows that our values are very much tied to Judeo-Christian values. And so the attack on the Christians is very much the spearhead of this assault on the West, and the worldwide assault on, you know, throughout, we see it everywhere. We see it in Africa. We see it in Indonesia. We see it in Asia. We see it in even to a certain extent in Europe, where Christians are being discriminated against for the practice of their beliefs. So this has become, and you certainly see restive Muslim populations castigating Christians as oppressing them. And this is all part of the same campaign to destroy Western values, to undermine the very foundations of the civilization that gives us all the freedoms that it does.
Avi, we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much for having me.
We'd love to have you back. You have a good day, sir.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. It's good to visit with you. It's a great day.
Good morning, world. It's a brand new day.
Earning your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award. 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. It's like a murderer's row of calls right now. We have Tom Munns, Greg Pruitt, and Tea Party Bob. Before we get to our friend Greg Pruitt, we go to Tom Munns, tommunns.com, Munns Tom Twitter. Good morning, sir. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, my God. Kevin, am I on the air?
You're on the air. Go ahead, please. Good morning.
Hey, I love the last interview you had. That was a great interview.
Avi.
I had a really, he said some really key things, and I thought that they would be good to hone in on in case people missed them. You know, ISIS is a, we're all worried about ISIS, and we're submitting our nation to fear because we believe that, you know, Islam is a danger to our society. It's no question that Islam poses a threat. The thing that we need to try to remember, though, is we need to keep our head on straight and look at this thing logically and look at ISIS for what it is. From the research that I've looked at, you know, it's suggested that ISIS spawned out of Mujahideen that was actually created in part, trained, and funded by our own government. So the question then becomes, if this is actually true, then didn't our own government, typical throughout history, in the government's ability to be able to take over people, isn't it used to be able to take control over not only this nation, but perhaps the world and submit it to fear to perhaps a more global agenda?
Tom Munns asking the big questions.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, we know that through history that there have been governments that have done a variety of different things to be able to enslave their people. One of them is to use every tactic in the name of security, destroying every freedom that we have. And when you go and you talk to, you know, many law enforcement agencies, you talk to government officials, they don't understand the word limitations. And limitations should be one of the first things that our legislature...
Now, do you believe that ISIS is a tool of our government for control?
I believe, yes, I do.
Why would they want to have the Islamic law?
Why would who want the Islamic law?
Our government.
Our government wouldn't even know Islamic law if it bit him in the butt. It doesn't even know our own law.
Well, they're chopping people's heads off.
Well, what I'm telling you is that where they are allegedly chopping people's heads off, and we can't, and that has not been verified. You know, just because we
you're saying those videos are fake.
They could be.
Well, no, Tom, are they fake or not?
Well, you don't know if they are or not.
I'm going to, seeing is believing, I believe that they are real. You believe that, now do you believe that they're not? I mean, talk to the family of James Foley.
Well, who created the videos?
ISIS.
And so ISIS is going to create a video, and we're supposed to believe that that they're real. I mean, we don't trust them in any other venue, in any other way.
I believe the bodies are real of who they're killing, killing people in Iraq.
Let's see the body. They call it a corpus delicti, right? So let's look at the corpus delicti.
Well, you're out there on a limb, Tom.
Well, let's look at it. I mean, seriously, we can't.
Tom, you're the only one that I know that doesn't believe that they're killing people. They're chopping people's heads off.
I'm the only one that I think that's screaming and ranting about the things I rant about, too. So, hey, you know what? That's what makes me special, right, Kevin?
I'm
a little different than everybody
you
else.
You always have a home with me, brother.
All right, bro. Thanks.
All right, Tom Munns, very controversial statements. Greg Pruitt, hang on the line. We'll go to Tea Party Bob at 580KIDO. A little better late than never, buddy.
Better late than never. I've been listening to you for quite some time here this morning. Just needed to pick a time to give you a call. You know, I tell you, if you had one of those transgenders walk into the gym that Judy and I go to, I think they would be thrown out on their butt with some of the women down there and their muscles.
What, you're not a man? You let the women beat you up or something like that?
No, I'm just talking about having them walk into the showers or into the...
It sounds like a pretty intense, intolerant place where you work out. You wouldn't have a problem showering with the transgenders?
No. Oh, come on, Kevin. Oh, you're in a mood this morning. I can tell.
It was Tom and the head chopping that got me going. But...
I see. You know, I wanted to talk about the double standard in our country with the Clintons. And this liberal progressive movement that's been going on for such a long time. You know, we had a Secretary of State who broke the law that she helped to make stronger. She's clearly in violation of using private email account for classified information. But she's probably going to get away with it. You know, the press is going to find another crisis, right? Or talk about, rather than talking about this one, is going to just disappear. It'll become page 7 or 8 news. You know, Hillary's part of a protected group in the national arena, as her husband was when they tried to impeach him. We've got a serious problem throughout America where the law is unevenly applied, where the privileged get off with their get-out-of-jail-free passes, and everyone else is thrown in a clink and vilified by the liberal media.
You know, you belong in the clink.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I mean, look what happened here with Alex LeBeau. He's not in a clink.
You know, we talked about him earlier this morning.
I know. Well, you know, here was... he was about to be whitewashed by his employers and given a slap on the wrist so he could keep his job. And then all of a sudden, the employers started getting complaints from the public. And lo and behold, he's on administrative leave, the next thing we see.
Both liberals and conservatives complaining to people like Idaho Power and others that back up Iaki.
I don't think the pillars of our community want to have this hanging over their heads. But this problem is endemic in our system where the elite get off with a slap on the wrist for murder and everyone else goes to jail for life. You know, if the public doesn't get outraged about these injustices and raise their voices, then the privileged will continue to get away with the illegal activities. Establishment Republicans have been totally ineffective in stopping this administration's lawlessness. And sometimes it looks like they made a deal with the liberals. They're not willing to enforce the laws, which allows us to investigate the scandals. I mean, everything has been under-investigated and goes unpunished.
And on that note, I need to get to Greg Pruitt.
One quick thing.
Who was scheduled at 8:35.
I don't think we're going to change this until we get a new kind of president to change the country. Maybe somebody like Scott Walker or Ben Carson.
Well, we appreciate your unsolicited presidential comment.
Anytime, and thank you very much. Have a great day, my friend.
God bless. Tea Bye. Party Bob, Gem State Patriot. Here we are. I thought this would be a segment on the latest concerning guns, since it was a big story yesterday that the House passed a bill. Greg Pruitt joining us from the Idaho Second Amendment Alliance. And, you know, it's a murderer's row there. You got Tea Party Bob, Tom Munns, and you.
Well, and then we went from chopping people's heads off to transgender showers, and now we're talking about guns.
What happened? Yes, again, proving once again the most eclectic talk show in America.
Yeah, so yesterday they had the print hearing. I don't know the House bill number yet. So basically this is the bill that they introduced yesterday is a rewrite of Senate Bill 1090, which is dead. So this is Senate Bill 1090, and I'm not exactly sure what they have changed from 1090, but it's very similar. There's still a few things in there that we have concerns with. One being, they always talk about removing the exemption for state legislators for not having to have a permit. But what they're not telling you, or that they don't want to talk about, is the law doesn't actually say elected officials. It actually says city, county, and state officials, which could be upwards of 30,000 people that already enjoy constitutional carry, that they're about to remove that with this new bill. They're going to remove all those exceptions. And while we believe that everyone needs to be on the same page and on the same playing field, we're going in the wrong direction. The criminals already have constitutional carry, okay, because they don't get a permit. And we've got all these other city, county, and state officials that have it. Let's focus on adding the rest of us to that, and that's what we tried to do this session.
Well, what does it say that you, a citizen, a leader of a group, can't get a hearing, and now we have the politician saying that the bill in your language was flawed? Now, who wrote your bill?
It's been written for quite a while, as you know, because we've been trying to do this forever now, but... actually, Eric McRush was the very first one to write our bill, and we've made subtle changes to it since then. And the funny thing is most of what we have done, about 99% of it, is striking language out. We only wrote one paragraph, and we've actually had it verified that paragraph is fine. It doesn't have any issues, even though Chairman Lurcher tried to claim it did. And if anyone wants to look, it's paragraph 11G.
So Chairman Lurcher says, and others, elected officials say, your bill's not going to get a hearing because of the language in it.
Yeah, that's what they try to claim, but we proved that wasn't true when I went down there and I asked Chairman Lurcher myself, face-to-face. I said, he pointed out this paragraph, and I said, no, that paragraph's fine. It doesn't do what you say it does. And then he kept going on about, they had four lawyers look at it, and they all said the same thing. And I said, okay, well, I'll come back to you in 4 hours with a new paragraph. No, I'm done with this bill. I'm done with it. It's not going anywhere. So it's not language. It has nothing to do with language. They are mad that we went forward and we put in a bill according to the real process, not the ad hoc gun committee process. And we put the bill forward, and they're mad that we didn't go through them. We didn't get their permission to try and put a bill forward to expand freedom. So they're upset. That's the real reason. They can come up with all sorts of excuses, and you've heard it. They've come up with excuses all session about why they can't put the bill forward, and it's getting tiring. It's getting old. Yeah.
What message does this send to people like yourself that for years you've worked with these same legislators? You've been told, and correct me if I'm wrong, to be a quote-unquote good boy, to work within the system, and things will happen. How has that worked out for you?
Well, it's not just me. It's the Idaho citizens should be really frustrated and outraged right now that we did for the first few years. We tried to get them to move forward on this, and they kept saying, well, let's do it next year. Let's do it during the election year. Next year, next year, next year. That was always their excuse. And so this year we said, forget that. You know what? We can put a bill in ourselves, and we'll get it rolling and see how we can do. And obviously they're still roadblocks. And one of the most Republican legislators in the country, and we can't get constitutional carry bill, a full hearing. The Utah Senate yesterday in Utah passed a veto-proof constitutional carry bill, a clean one, just like ours. And so I think Idaho citizens, even Idaho legislators, ought to take a look around what's happening in the country right now in regards to this issue and go, hey, over 10 states have now passed constitutional carry in at least one chamber. And yet we're sitting here and we can't get it anywhere. There's some serious issues going on right now, Kevin, and we've got to get that fixed.
So we aren't as pro-gun as Wyoming or Utah.
Apparently our legislators are not. Our laws are very similar to theirs currently, but we've got some work to do. and we can't get that work done because they keep wanting to do these other bills that nobody, and I don't want anyone to think that I don't want to streamline the code. That's what this bill is about that they're doing, is streamlining the code to make it flow better. I don't have an issue with that, but the problem is when you have over 5,000 signatures for a constitutional carry, they've gotten thousands of phone calls and emails from all over the state of Idaho, and they're ignoring all of those people. That's a problem. That's a really big problem.
What's next for you?
Well, we're, you know, Chairman Lurcher came out and said that the bill is dead. You know, he still has a chance to turn that around this week, especially, and get it going. So we urge people to keep up the pressure. And the other thing we would urge people to do, I get a lot of questions, where's the NRA? Why hasn't the NRA helped support constitutional carry here in Idaho, as they've done in other states? And I would urge you to reach out to your NRA local reps and ask them that question. I can't answer that for them, so you're going to have to ask them. But we're going to keep pressing forward, Kevin, and eventually we're going to get constitutional carry for Idaho citizens.
Keep up the great work. Thank you for making yourself available. I'm sorry that we had, you know, a couple folks ahead of you, but we'll leave you to comment on them.
No, I love Tom and Bob both. They're great people, and it's good to see so many people here that are active politically, Kevin, and you are the conduit for us to be able to reach out to a lot of the citizens that maybe don't get involved as much, but at least they're paying attention to your show and paying attention to what's going on.
Greg, thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. Greg Pruitt with us. For more information, go to Facebook, Idaho Second Amendment Alliance, 853 Kevin.